I'm Jody, the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc.
And this is Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas.
We bring together the mom experience and the doc expertise to give you the information and tools you need to help make the next right decision to get your child back.
Let's dive in. Hi there, it's Jody, the mom side of Mom and Doc Talk. Dr. Barr and I are taking a short summer break to soak up some family time, and we hope you are too. While we're away, we're bringing back some of your favorite episodes, especially powerful stories from parents who've been where you are and found their way forward with homeopathy. We hope these episodes give you a little extra hope and a reminder that healing is possible. The Mom and Doc Talk podcast is brought to you by Resilience Naturopathic, a team of naturopathic doctors specializing in helping children with PANS pandas heal through classical homeopathy. Our providers are supported by a team made up largely of PANS parents, so we truly understand what you are going through. We work with families around the world and are determined to change how PANS families experience healthcare. You can learn more about us at resiliencenaturopathic.com. Enjoy the episode.
In this episode, we're going to be talking about some things that might be a little hard for some people to hear. So there might be some traumatic events that are discussed that could be problematic for some people. So just listen carefully if this is one that you might have concerns about, whether it would impact you negatively, or if you really think that it might not be so great for you, go ahead and skip it until you're ready for it at another time. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Mom and Doc Talk. We are joined today for our first mom guest host of our season three for this series. So we are very happy to welcome Sarah. So Sarah is the parent of three kidults, one with mild PANS and one with severe PANS. She grew up in Los Angeles County and settled in Orange County, California with her husband of 25 years. She was an elementary teacher for 10 years before deciding to switch to special education. And I just got to pause and say, like, special place in my heart for anybody chooses special education. It is a tough route. I mean, my mom was a teacher. My mother-in-law was a teacher. My grandmother was a teacher. Long line of teachers. Teaching is hard enough, and to switch to special education. So good for you.
I love it.
Sarah has been teaching in elementary special education for the last 15 years and absolutely loves her career. She loves to garden and hang with her family and their two dogs, and she is passionate about homeopathy as it's changed the course of her child's life and therefore hers as well. So welcome, Sarah. We are very honored to have you join us and so grateful for every parent who is willing to come and have the vulnerability to share about their story, because this is not an easy journey to go through. So welcome.
Thank you.
So we read your bio, but tell us just a little bit more about yourself.
I mean, that kind of covers it. I don't know. I'm a problem solver. I'm someone that is going to, like, if you put a problem in front of me, I'm going to try to solve it, which I know is not always a good thing. I've been told that. But I feel like that's kind of how I ended up here in the first place, is because I was always searching for, like, how do we fix this? How do we, you know? And I don't know, that translates into my life in general. I'm constantly researching and looking into things, as I'm sure a lot of parents are when they have kids with struggles. You pretty much nailed it with everything else. That's what I do. I get up, I drink coffee, I go to work, I come home, I be a mom, and then I start it all over again the next day. So,
well, I love that you gave us the context, though, not just about what you do, because that's what we generally put in bios, right? We put what we do in bios, and, like, I love how you said, like, this is who I am, and, like, shared a little bit more about, like, how you relate to the world, which I'm sure a lot of parents actually appreciate, because so many identify the same way that you do. Like, that's how a lot of people end up here, is they're looking for solutions. They're like, they are problem solvers. So I actually really appreciate that.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. I don't think I was born that way. I think that life made me that way. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like, the circumstances that we're
here. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
I feel like you just read my mind, because I was sitting here thinking, I wonder how many of us weren't really problem solvers, or, like, highly driven to dive deeply into things. And then PANS kind of forces, which is part of why I feel like PANS also shows us some of the best parts of ourselves, too. Because we learn about places that we don't know about ourselves yet. So let's start in the very beginning. Tell us a little bit about how PANS first showed up in your life.
So I didn't know it was PANS for, 12 years after it started. It was a very, very long time of not knowing. I can actually give you a day. It was September 29th of 2007, because it was my other daughter's birthday. And my youngest at the time was one, so she was 15 months old. And she woke up and was, just a different kid that day. And, you know, you don't think much of it first day, kind of like, what's going on? Oh, you're not feeling well, whatever. She woke up really different. And she kind of was never the same. She was a pretty typical baby before that. She had a lot of illnesses and stuff. But you know, nothing big, ear infections, nose, you know, baby stuff that kids get sick. That was like the day that everything kind of went upside down. She lost, oh my gosh, everything, speech, motor movements, life in her eyes. She turned into what we call dead eyes. Then of course, over the years, we ended up with every possible childhood disorder related to mental health that you could accumulate. Easily got an autism diagnosis. I don't think the doctor looked at her for more than a second before she said, yeah, that's called autism. I was like, okay.
How old was she?
She was two.
Okay.
Yeah. So we did the autism thing for quite a while. We operated under that diagnosis for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then right around age five, she was just kind of like a crazy kid before that. She was fine. She ABA therapy, all the therapies that you get when you have autism at that age. And she was just a spunky, you know, hard to manage, but nothing crazy, right? She was just our high energy kid that we had to manage. Mm-hmm. At baby number three. And then when she was five, it got kind of nutty, like tantrums kind of started, bad ones. And then that's when we ended up with like actual medication. You know, putting your five-year-old on Prozac is never a good thing. But that's what we did. That's what we had to do. We were in survival mode trying to figure out how to calm it down. Mm-hmm. We operated that way for a little while. And then age nine, it ended up like, okay, now we have an ADHD diagnosis. Okay, now we have an OCD diagnosis. She started having rages. Like, I don't know that you understand what rage means until you've, you know, experienced it. I know you guys probably do. And those people listening to this would understand that. But like,
some wouldn't, though. So if you can share.
The average parent, you know, a rage is just a really angry kid, right? This is not that. This is tearing apart walls, tearing apart doors, breaking windows. We have scars, physical scars from being attacked. You know, this is putting keypad locks on everyone's door but hers, to save your other kids and yourself in the middle of the night because she walks in with knives and scissors. That kind of rage. And it was almost every day from like age nine until around age 11 is when I discovered PANS, because at that point she got a bipolar diagnosis as well because she was going to school and managing her day. And yeah, you know, she had an IEP and everyone knew she had stuff going on, but there were no rages at school. Mm-hmm. You know, there was nothing like that. You know, she had friends, people that would, you know, tolerate her, play with her at recess, things like that. It didn't look the same at school that it looked at home. And, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know where I was going with that, but when she got that, the bipolar thing, she got her bipolar diagnosis because of that, I think, that ability to be off, on, whatever. And I think that was diagnosis number six. And at that point, I was like, okay, seriously, like, what is this? And that's when that whole like need to search really got going, because when your 11-year-old has six mental health diagnoses and no rationale, no one could tell me why any of it, right? It just, right. Here's another one. I felt like they would pick up a dart and throw it and be like, what have we not called it yet? And then just pick a new thing, right?
Right.
So I started going searching for answers and we ended up with the PANS diagnosis somewhere around 11 or 12. I don't remember. It's fuzzy.
Was that something that you found on your own and you took to a doctor, or you went to, yep, like a So how did you find out about it?
I was sitting in a tire shop getting tires on my car, and there was some magazine, I don't know what it was, some family magazine or whatever that they have. And there was an article that said, what if it's pandas? And I was like, what's pandas? And I started reading it, and I sat there like sweating in the middle of the tire store going like, oh my God, like this is my kid. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't pandas because she didn't have strep, but it was pans. Same. Mm-hmm. To me, it's all the same.
Pandas is pans. Pandas is a specific type of pans.
Yeah. Yeah. So I literally sat there like staring at this magazine, just reading it over and over and over. And then I ran home and dove into the computer. And I can't remember how many criteria there are presented and how many you needed to have, but she had like triple the number of symptoms that were required for the diagnosis. And I was like, holy cow. And I called her doctor that day and made an appointment. And he was a functional slash, whatever, what's the word? Allopathic.
Yeah. The conventional.
Yeah. He sat on both sides of the fence, which is why I liked him so much. And brought it to him, and he was like, well, I don't know. Did a bunch of tests, which I know now he didn't even have to do, but he did them all. We paid all the money for the Cunningham and, you know, all the whatever the tests are beyond that, all the strep tests, things like that. And then he diagnosed her. So, yeah, that was a long answer for how it showed up in my life. But
it's always a long answer, though, because it's never a simple thing for any family.
Yeah, it was like 12 years of trying to manage it before we realized what it was. And it just got progressively worse and worse and worse until it got to the point where, like, I didn't even want to go home.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
About not wanting to go home?
Yeah.
I was working at that point, obviously. I went back to work when she was five. I had to take off time from teaching. That's when I made the transition from general education to special education, was while I was home for 5 years when she was little, because I couldn't go back to work. She needed therapy all day long. That was a good time for me to take night classes and things like that. So anyway, I was working and I found myself one day driving home and feeling like I couldn't breathe, like really feeling like my throat was closing up. And here's me in my head going, oh, did I eat something? I'm not allergic to very much. Like, what did I do? Right. Went home, took a Benadryl thinking that would solve the problem. And went about my day. The next day, driving home, the exact same thing happened at the exact same spot, like 3 minutes from my house. And it hit me. I was like, okay, this is anxiety. Like, I don't want to go deal with her. I would rather be at work all day. I cannot, you know, walk into my house and feel comfortable. Yeah, that was bad. It was a real hard realization.
Yeah. There's a couple of things that you said that I want to make sure that we acknowledge and talk about. So first and foremost, I want to applaud you even more than I already did that you chose special ed and as a focus while your daughter was going through all of this, while you were at home with her. You said, you're not the person that said, I have enough of this at home. I don't want to deal with any of this during my day. You said, okay.
Yeah.
Bring it, basically.
Yeah. Kind of funny if you think about it. I don't know. I don't know how that happened, but it did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, there's a reason, right? Like, I'm sure that there's probably part of it that the solution-oriented person that, like, that you were looking for solutions, and that was one of the ways that you also probably came around to that. And it probably makes you a much better special ed teacher that, like, you got into this space when you were helping your daughter through all of these challenges that she was going through as well.
I think so. I have a lot of patience for my students. Yeah. Just because, and their parents too.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I just want to acknowledge too, before we go into our next question, because we want to hear about like all the things that you did after you found out that it was pans and pandas, like, you know, people want to hear this. So you said it's not a good thing to put your five-year-old on medication. And I just want to, I basically want to like remind you that maybe it was a hard thing, but it's not necessarily a bad thing, right?
And so, sorry, I should have said it wasn't a feel good thing.
Yes.
Right. Because we absolutely made the decision to do it.
Yeah.
And she was not only on Prozac, she was on Guanfacine, mm-hmm. the Intuniv, whatever, whichever one at the time. And we have tried since then a whole host of pharmaceuticals. So mm-hmm. I didn't mean it to sound judgy for anyone else who has their child on something. I would never say that. What I meant was it didn't feel good. Like I drove home with the prescription and sobbed in my driveway. Right.
Right.
So, but we did it and we have since tried many of them. So no judgment on trying it. Absolutely. But it felt crappy.
And I wanted to offer that for you too, not just for like to acknowledge for anybody else who might be listening and heard that and might've had like a, cause you know, we all want our kids to be as healthy as possible and it's a hard decision to make. And we sometimes need to make those decisions, right?
Yeah.
And some people, it's not a hard thing. Some people it's like, yes, please give me that. My child needs relief. I need relief. And it's, you know, it's, we're always doing the best that we can. And I just know a lot of parents who I've talked to for the podcast and in my practice and like in our community who have a lot of guilt about it. And I just, so for you or anybody else who's feeling guilt, like.
Don't feel guilt. Yeah. No, sorry if it came off that way. I should have. Yeah.
No. There's you did great. I was more concerned about you feeling guilt, and acknowledging
that at this point. Yeah, no, at this point,
all
I
right.
had to give all that up.
Fantastic. And I hope for that for everybody, that everybody's able to get to the point that they let go of anything. They've always made the best decisions they could to get to the place that they're at. And we always are making the best decision we can, even if in retrospect, we might've wanted to do something different, or even if it was a hard decision. And you were dealing with a really hard thing. Like, I really appreciate that you shared that, like, so many families, it's not a clear PANS onset. You know, like there's this description of PANS being like this overnight, which you did see an overnight change, mm-hmm. but it wasn't a clear PANS overnight change. Yeah. And then it got the stacking on of more and more diagnoses and like
ridiculous.
All in the mental and behavioral health realm. And there's so many people that like if they're carrying a whole lot of diagnoses, the central factor might just be PANS. So I'm really glad that you shared all of that.
It makes so much, it was such an aha moment when I read that article because I'd never heard of it, right? And you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
So, you know, like PANS is not anything anyone ever mentioned to me before. So Random Magazine, thank you so much, you know, changed our life. But if you don't know, you just follow what doctors tell you, you know?
So. Yeah. A whole lot of random things that get people where they need to go. It was a random magazine that had me
so random.
In naturopathic medicine too. So
really?
Yeah.
Yay for magazines. Yeah. I don't know. Was yours in a tire shop?
Yeah. Mine was not at a tire shop. Mine was while I was an Arabic linguist and I was like at work in defense intelligence and like I was taking a break and I was reading some magazine. So not an entire shop, but also like a place that you wouldn't necessarily expect to be like, aha, here's what I'm going to like, here's where my future is.
Yeah.
All right. So as you shared, you've tried a lot of medications and you worked with a doctor who did like both a functional and allopathic approach. So what all did you really try before you got to homeopathy and tell us a little bit about how it went?
Sometimes I feel like the answer is what didn't we try? But then sometimes I also go on all these pages and people are talking about all kinds of things that are just way beyond my brain, biological things. So I don't know. We tried so many psych drugs. The list is so long. I mean, everything, SSRIs, SNRIs, antipsychotics, a variety of each, you know, all the antihistamines, both, over the counter and prescription, beta blockers, oh my gosh, the anti-inflammatories, again, prescription and not. Shout out to Motrin, actually, which works pretty well. Oh my gosh, love Motrin. What would we do without Motrin? Steroids. Prednisone was actually the thing that tipped my doctor into believing, not believing per se, but diagnosing PANS. He gave me a prescription for steroids and I was afraid to use it because, you know, roid rage, right? And you don't ever hear anything good about steroids, really.
Yeah.
They're always, you know, it's a negative connotation for whatever reason. And he gave them to me and I held off for way too long giving it to her. There was one day, it was Veterans Day and she was home and I was home and her throat was hurting her. And it was a really, really, really bad day. Just so much aggression, so much rage. And I was like, you know what? Take this pill. And I gave her a prednisone. And she, 3 days, 2 days later, was like a different kid. Mm-hmm. I came downstairs. Hi, Mom. Good morning. And I was like, hey, hi. Like, just
who are you?
Right. Just like, whoa. And so called the doctor and he was like, so you have immune issues, right? And I was like, okay. So then I'm diving into what actually steroids do because I didn't really know. And that made so much sense with PANS. So it all just, all these pieces started, you know, coming together. But steroids were a great thing. Motrin is a great thing. We did a protocol for both of them. However, neither of those things can be used long-term, right? So the steroids stopped working. Motrin decided to tear her stomach up while we were on a vacation in Canada. Didn't see that coming until she drank a lemonade one day. And then like, that was it. Like, couldn't eat for days. And here we are out of the country, right? That was awesome. So we had to stop Motrin. We were stopping steroids. And then it was like, okay, now what? All my rescue remedies are gone. We ended up doing IVIG. And I remember talking to Jody about this when I was doing my intake about how we did it. And the first 3 months I was like, okay, this is helping. This is so great. And I had put so much effort into getting that approved. And anyone who's tried that will understand how hard it is to get IVIG approved, with a PANS diagnosis. Like it was nuts. And then to get it covered was a whole nother thing, right? Just craziness. The first three weren't covered. We were shelling out money right and left trying to help our kid. And we were 7 months into IVIG and it stopped helping, much like a lot of the drugs that we had used. She would have great response at first. And then a few months in, like Abilify, she was on Abilify for 7 months and it was glorious. Mm-hmm. And then like the 7 month mark hit and it just, she fell apart. And so of course, what do? You increase the dose. Okay. Yeah. And then it got worse. And then we did like a Risperdal trial for 2 weeks and she lost functioning. Rages were worse, like lost all her executive functioning skills. So then we like pulled that one. Everything was just trial, error. And the same thing happened with the IVIG. We were on month 7 and I was like, and we pushed through. We ended up doing 9 of them. I had started homeopathy by the 9th one. But the 9th one turned her into just a raging feral. I hate to use the word psychotic, but she was psychotic afterwards. And so we quit that too. So we tried. Oh my gosh.
And
that was just the stuff I was putting in her mouth. I mean, supplements, right? I don't even know. We were spending $500 a month on supplements. Like, I don't even know if any of it worked. It was ridiculous. It was too many to even count. No, she was taking 50 pills a day. It was ridiculous.
With an autism diagnosis early on and seeing a functional provider, you're probably on a pretty strict diet too.
Yep. Oh yeah. She was gluten-free. We did dairy-free for a while. Didn't seem to make a difference. So mostly gluten-free, no colors, absolutely no artificial colors. All the great easy things to manage with a young kid, you know, entering puberty and all that. It was awesome.
Yeah. And you were drowning in all of this, I'm sure, as we all drowned in it.
All of it. And financially, too, because, I mean, who can, you know, afford just the amount of supplements? It was ridiculous. The doctor's appointments, like, it was insane.
Yeah.
Crazy. I get, like, blah, thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, tell us about how homeopathy first showed up in your life and how you learned about it.
Facebook, watching, joining the group. You know, as soon as I got
so you hadn't even heard about it? Like it was not a new thing for you? Okay.
No, I had no idea. I mean, I'd seen the vials and whatnot at the grocery store. You know, we got the local Sprouts or Henry's, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
That has it, Whole Foods, things like that. But I didn't know what it was or pay any attention to it. And then I joined every PANS or PANDAS Facebook page that I could. And your page with the title with PANS and PANDAS in it was one I was like, hey, why not? Let's do this. Mm-hmm. And it was just one thing that I did any moment, free moment that I had, I was on Facebook trying to learn about my kid and what to do and what other people were doing. And I didn't go in search of homeopathy. It was just one page that happened to pop up and I would be reading and reading about. And I lurked. I lurked on your page for probably just under 2 years.
Before. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, you know, no regrets, right? Because you can't regret what's in the past. But that is a regret that I didn't jump in sooner. But yeah, it took me a long time. It was when I realized IVIG wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
And I was like, I am out of options here. Like the big deal thing that I thought was going to work, that I put all my time and energy into, did not work. And then it's like, okay, well, now I'm up for whatever, you know, do whatever. Homeopathy, okay, you know, I don't even know. I was going to start looking into energy crystals. I mean, like, seriously, whatever at that point, like, give me something that works. So, yeah.
The road to recovery with homeopathy isn't the same for everyone, but in general, it isn't easy. What has it been like for you?
Long. There's really no sugarcoating that. It's been long. We will be patients of Resilience for 6 years in October, this coming October. So it's not been a quick fix. And I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, because I think in our world and in our days, these days, everybody's looking for something to fix, right? The quicker, the better. This is not quick. At least it wasn't for us. So it's been long, 5.5 years. But when you physically can see that something's working, you keep doing it, even though it takes forever. If it's slow, the first year was pretty great. We're still struggling obviously with a lot of things, but there were just a lot of gains. There was a lot of good stuff, you know? I remember one of the first couple of weeks after she started, I was walking upstairs and I heard her in her room and she was doing this like script. Mind you, this is like a 13-year-old at this point, right? She was doing a script that she had done when she was really little, and I hadn't heard her do it in years. And it was a script that made her happy, where she would pretend she was the teacher and have kids and, you know, was like teaching children in her bedroom. And I stood at the top of the stairs and I couldn't breathe. I was like, oh my God, that's wonderful, right? Like, that's such a random thing. But I wrote it down and I told Dr. Rowley about it. And like, we've been tracking that symptom, talking to herself ever since, because it was such a like huge thing that I hadn't heard her do in so long and that I knew made her happy. Mm-hmm. So things like that, her rages all but stopped. It was a good, the first year on homeopathy was really good.
Yeah.
The second year it started aggravating. Which was hard for me to recognize because she hadn't in like a whole year. And so I'm just going about my day doing my normal. And then all of a sudden, like, she's getting worse. And I'm like, why is that happening? And Dr. Rowley had to be like, hello, is she aggravating? I'm like, I don't know. What does that look like? I have no idea. Turns out, yes, she was. And I don't know if she just needed to get to that point. Like, if she had so much healing to do that she didn't aggravate until that second year. But she eventually, it happened. And then there was backsliding and things got hard again. And you know, I don't know, in the 5 years plus that we've been doing this, we've had good times. We've had a couple of years, honestly. How do I, without a trigger warning, just really hard years.
We're already going to put a trigger warning in. So if you want to say something that is honest, we will just include it in the trigger warning.
Okay. There were a couple of years I didn't think she was going to make it. Even through homeopathy, she tried to kill herself twice in that time. One, not severely. I mean, it was a pretty feeble attempt with some, you know, melatonin gummies, that kind of thing. It's not funny, but, you know, I was like, okay, we need to go to the hospital. And it wasn't a big dramatic thing. But then the second time, it really was dramatic. She really did do some harm to herself. And I don't know. We stuck. And those were times that we like, okay, we need to try meds again, right? And you cross your fingers and hope this med is actually going to work this time. Mm-hmm. And of course it didn't. And then we're weaning off meds again. And I'm kicking myself, like, why am I back on this train? Mm-hmm. And I know it's because, you know, we got desperate. And she was really struggling. And there were doctors telling us what to do. And we kept with homeopathy the entire time. And I actually really appreciated Dr. Rowley, like, talking to me. I remember her talking to me at one of the appointments saying, like, that we're going to double down. And if, you know, on the slightest little inkling that something like that might happen again, I need to let her know and, like, not, you know, I don't know, go about my day. Because I'm so, you know, when you're at that stage, you're so used to all the big deal stuff. It just happens so often that you just kind of go, okay, yeah, it's just another day with this kid. But she was like, you need to, like, the slightest thing you need to tell me. And I was like, okay. And I really appreciated that. And we stuck with it. We did take a 5-month break from homeopathy at one point, because she had been hospitalized and, didn't take her remedy while she was there. And, I needed a baseline, and I kept in contact with Dr. Rowley, but we took a break until the point where I was like, okay, I can see she needs something again. And we jumped back in.
Yeah.
And then,
and you did the right thing. Like, I can't speak for Dr. Rowley or, you know, I haven't, like, reviewed your case or anything like that. But, you know, at Resilience Naturopathic, when we see kids go through these episodes, that, you know, like, homeopathy is not like a shield. It's not going to, like, prevent any, like, if there is something that's part of somebody's susceptibility, it could still manifest. And sometimes, like, puberty, it sounds like maybe there was a puberty component there.
Totally.
Then things get a little bit wonky. And so new things that we're susceptible to become more apparent or are brought to the surface because of the changes that are happening internally. And we absolutely support doing what we need to do to keep kids safe in those moments. And then helping them to address that susceptibility. But sometimes safety is... sometimes safety requires that we go beyond homeopathy for a period of time. So,
And we did. And she's always been on board with, you know, as long as I tell her what we're doing, you know, like, just so that everybody's on the same page. And we had to do that. And we've had to do that throughout the 5 years, give or take, with random things. But somehow this past year, it all just finally clicked. She turned 18 last June. And so we did add TMS because that's a adult only covered situation, right? So we did TMS. I'm not sure if it helped. She thinks it did, but, you know, we did that with homeopathy as well. She went through a ton of therapy after her hospitalization. And honestly, the first time we didn't do that because she wasn't in a place where she could accept it. And she finally got to that place where she could accept the therapy and that she needed it and that she wasn't, you know. So I don't know. Before that, it was always, I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't need it. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, if there's anyone who needs it, it's you, love, right? But she couldn't accept it. And then at this point, she finally got to the point where she could. And it all just kind of fell into place at that point, you know. She's been on the same remedy now. I mean, she's been on a lot of remedies. The first one we were on, she was on for over that first year, was the same remedy. And she's revisited it, I think, at least 2 more times, which is always interesting. But the one she's on now, she's been on, I think, almost a year now. And something about it, I don't know, it still works to this day. It's been, the question was the road to recovery. It's been long. I don't know how else to describe it. Long.
Long and hard, it sounds
long
like.
Long and hard, but also being where we're at right now is, it's surreal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just curious. Yeah. Where are you at right now? How is she doing now? What's life like right now?
Good. I don't want to jinx it, by saying good, but, she's doing well. She's happy. She's a senior in high school. She got her driver's license in August, and passed it. The permit and the test on the first try, which in California is supposed to be...
That's a really hard thing to do.
Hilarious, because her brother and sister did not, right? And so I'm like, okay, plot twist. Like, what just happened here, right? Alternate universe stuff. So she's been driving. Her grades are okay, you know? Like, she's not failing any classes, which is great, because that's happened. And she just got a job. And it's a very people-y job. And she's hosting and food running and answering phones at a restaurant and likes it and is making her own money and is feeling productive and is going out with friends. Like, she doesn't have a lot of friends, but she has, you know, what she needs, and she's going out, she's taking herself places comfortably in the car, and she's planning to go to community college next year. Like, if you would have asked me these things, I mean, even up to two, three years ago, certainly not any time before that, if I would have thought that this kid would have done that, and it never in my wildest dreams. Like, the goal has always been just graduate high school. And then I don't know what we'll do, but I'm like shocked.
Yeah.
At how well she's doing. So, and I know that sounds awful, right? As a parent, to say you're surprised that your child is thriving. But like,
when you go through what you went through from the time she was two, like, I can't imagine any parent who had been through even half of what you went through from the time that she was two to not feel like surprise or shock, because it's such a turn of events from like what your trajectory was at one point.
Yeah, I'm trying not to cry thinking about it. It's crazy. And like, we had a family party a few weeks ago, and we didn't tell anybody that she had a job, and everybody got there, and you know, everyone, no one even asks where she is, because where is she always? Upstairs in her room hiding. She'll come down for food, but like, she doesn't ever really want to associate with people. And so someone asked, you know, hey, where is she? And I was like, actually, she's at work. And like, the whole room turned and looked at me like, what? These are people that have known her whole life, right? Turned and looked at me like, I'm sorry, what? And then she came home all in her cute work outfit. And everybody, you could just see everybody was like this. I'm like, okay, so it's not just me. You know, it's, I don't know. I feel badly saying that, but it's 100% true. I'm shocked.
Yeah.
And very pleased.
Don't feel badly. I think it makes sense that we see our kids at the depths that they go to and how severe things really are. And it I don't know that, like, it still feels surreal to me. Like, I still feel shocked at like random moments throughout the day where I'm like, my kid is thriving. And this is so, like, I'm so surprised we're here, and it never stops being surprising. It's such a drastic difference between the two worlds.
Well, really,
even from my perspective as a provider, granted, I'm not living in it with people all day, every day, like you guys are living in it with your kids. But seeing thousands of kids come through from like the where they are to where they get to, and like the pictures that we get, the Christmas cards and stuff like that we get from families with their kids. Like, I'm literally getting chills as I'm saying this right now. Like, all of the things that we get that these kids, that when you look back to where they were, and like, we are still shocked day in and day out, even having seen literally thousands of kids get their lives back and like improve and just function, and like these small things that none of us at Resilience Naturopathic take for granted, because these small things are so huge. Because the truth of the matter is, there's so many people who there was not this, the things that they're doing were not things that anybody would have ever expected them to do.
No, not at all. And something you said about kids getting their lives back, it's not just the kids. Mm-hmm. It's anybody who lives with that child gets their life back. You know, our whole house was falling apart until we started homeopathy.
And it's definitely a family condition. It's not just one.
Yep. And I 100% credit homeopathy for fixing it. I do. It's literally the only thing that's worked consistently throughout this whole process.
A little bit. I'm a long haul, like a long healer. As Jody's like, it's not a long hauler, it's a long healer, because that we've got healing coming with it, and things are getting better, even if it's taking so long healers. I am also one that's been a long healer, and
I've read your story. Yes.
Yeah. It sounds like your daughter and I have some things in common. It sounds like.
Oh. Yeah. I'm. If she turns out half as successful as you, I will be thrilled. Thrilled.
Let's talk about the good and the bad, or not necessarily the bad, but let's talk about what you love the most about homeopathy, but then also what you found the most challenging.
I love that it's consistent. Even when a remedy stops working, I know that's okay, because I just get on the phone with Dr. Rowley and we get another one. And that one probably will, that consistency is super comforting after all the other meds we've tried that just haven't worked. It's just nice to know it's like always there, mm-hmm. And there's so many variations, like, hey, this one wasn't good, but there's always another, so that's kind of nice. Mm-hmm. I love that it's gentle, and that even if there's an aggravation, it's not a permanent thing. And that there's a way around it. And that actually, that usually means that something good is coming, right? Which is counterintuitive to what we normally, are taught. But I love that part about it, that there's no damage being done, right? Versus with meds, I always felt guilt giving to, there's that guilt again, especially the heavy duty ones. Like, it's just so hard to give something like that to your child when they're little. I love that I can see it working. Mm-hmm. She's a pretty quick responder. So like, I'll give her a palette, or now she's at the point where she does it herself. And 20 minutes later, she's like, I hate to say fixed right up, but like it is noticeably a difference when she's on the right remedy. It works very quickly for her, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And I love that it's actually healing her, rather than just covering up stuff, which is what everything else did, I feel like, is just covered it all up. And then it came back in other ways, it was always like we were squeezing it into some other spot and then it would seep out over here. And, it just with homeopathy, I feel like it's actually healing her, like you said, long healing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I affectionately refer to it as sorcery, because I know that there's science behind all of it. And by almost 6 years in, I should have a better grasp of that, but I don't. And I just trust the process that it works. And, Dr. Rowley tells me to do it, I do it, because I trust her so much at this point. I love all that about it. What's challenging, other than just, it's that speed, that whole long healing thing. Like I said, I'm a problem solver, a doer, and like I kind of operate, like this when it comes to literally everything else. And so it's kind of maddening for me that we have to take so long to see so much progress. But it's also humbling at that point. And you kind of have to realize, like, if it's going to be done right, it's got to be done slowly. So I look back and I think of all the things that we did that were quick fixes. That ended up not working at all. And here's this one thing that is the opposite of quick fix, and it's the only thing that's worked. So yeah, it's the speed is challenging, but that's okay.
I'm right there with you. I wish it could go faster. I wish we could make it go in the order we want it to go. I wish that it did work like an umbrella. And once we got started, things would only get better and there wouldn't be the ups and downs.
But that's okay. Here we are. And there's nowhere I'd rather be. So, yeah.
Awesome. What advice would you offer to parents just learning that their kid has PANS?
Hunker down. I'm not sure that's helpful, but it's true. It's a long journey. It took me a long time to settle into being okay with it being a long time. Mm-hmm. you know, and obviously I'm still saying the biggest challenge is the timeline, right? Mm-hmm. So I think once I resolved myself to this is going to be a while, then I became sort of more sane, I guess, about it and more capable of handling it. Because, you know, in the thick of it, you just want to find that thing. So I don't know. You have to be patient. And you absolutely have to take care of yourself as well. I started off pretty strong. I'm a pretty strong person. I can handle a lot, obviously. I think any pants parent at that point can say that. But somewhere along the middle of the time that we were with RN, so like the last 5 years, somewhere along the middle of that, when it started getting hard again, I kind of lost it. Mm-hmm. And I had to call and make an appointment for myself too, which I didn't want to do, you know, because we're the ones that we got it all, right? We can do it. We can handle it.
Fine.
We moms, right? We can take on the world. And I was like, I'm drowning here. Like, I'm being awful to my husband and my other kids. I'm not doing well at work. I'm letting work issues get to me. I'm just grumpy and irritable, you know? And I kind of was like, I need to take care of myself too. So, in whatever way you think that needs to be done, it's so hard. It's probably one of the hardest things to do, to admit that you need help too. But I did. And, I joined as well. I signed up and I waited 6 months, almost 6 months to get in with Dr. Rowley as well, because it was important to me that, I had the same doctor, because she knew everything already. And it was just so easy for her to kind of know where I was coming from, because she knew my kid inside and out. So that was the way I chose. I chose to be a patient as well. And it helped me a lot, an absolute lot. And I just recently ended that. I took a break and I recently ended it. And I was so sad when I did it. I had to email and thank her for everything and just say, I'm going to keep on with my daughter, but not for me, because I'm doing better. Mm-hmm. She's doing better. And therefore, you know, I am doing better as well. But I've done a couple of years of it myself. And I'm very grateful I did. It helped me a lot.
Our goal is to work ourselves out of a job. Like, we love our clients, but we don't want to talk to you guys forever because we you did not need us. So, even if you're not like fully to the best place that you could possibly be, if you've reached the place that you're going to be, you know, with homeopathy, at least at this point in your life, and even if there's something else, that's great. I'm so happy to hear that it helped you and that you got to the place that you were able to say, I'm good and I don't need this right now.
Yeah, it helped me a lot. It really did. In lots of ways, not just, you know, mental health ways, but there's, it helped me with, she's been tracking all my physical symptoms and stuff too. So it's, you know, which if you feel better physically, you're going to feel better mentally. So I learned a lot about myself through that process as well. So I'm really, really glad that I took the time, energy, and, you know, the extra money monthly to help me as well. I think I needed it in order to help her.
So
the advice is just be prepared for a long time and resolve yourself that that's okay. And that, you know, to be patient and to get the help for yourself to be able to make it through that long journey.
You're speaking my language with accepting the things that are up in front of you, whether you like them or not, the accepting what is, and letting go of control of the things that you really can't control, because there's so much suffering when we're trying to control something that is not controllable. And that's kind of what you described, was like, once you finally got reached a place of acceptance, that there was some amount of relief just in that.
Yeah. I mean, I was like, this is going to take a while. Yeah. And I just kept telling myself, she was sick for, you know,
a while,
like almost 13 years. At that point, it's like, that's not going to fix overnight, you know, like I didn't even, you know, people ask all the time on your page, right? How long? And you're constantly answering. I see that you're constantly answering, you know, anywhere, 2 years, however many years. Right. And when you're new, I was like, okay, 2 years. Okay. And then That's like a year and a half in. I was like, okay, no, that's not going to be the case. And really, once I was like, I have to take a timeline off of it.
Yeah.
It's not going to be 2 years. It's not going to be 3 years. It might be 5, 6, 7, 8 years. I don't know.
Right.
That's okay. As soon as I like was at peace with that, I was able to manage it better. So,
and even when we look at averages, that's still just an average. There's people on like all sorts of spectrums with it, you know, and like, and like lots of things that contribute, including, you know, you did a lot of things that you needed to do to help your daughter before you even knew homeopathy existed. And sometimes that makes things a little bit
makes it longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like how many of those things were the opposite of helpful? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. So we had a lot to unravel. Talk about an onion. I mean, so, you know, like she had layer upon layer of things and who knew, who even knows what was going on in her body, but it was not pretty. So it's taken a long time. And I, even though she's doing so well right now, I don't say like she's healed. I don't say that because that's too final. You know what I mean? Like she's healing. She's on, I do believe she's on that other side of healing that you talk about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like because the second half of healing, I can see that. I've been able to see that for a while.
Yeah.
But I don't know what really healed looks like yet because it's just been such a short time still that she's been doing this well. I don't know that I'll ever be fully accepting of, okay, we're done here. I don't know if that's ever going to happen. I mean, I'm not sure. And that's okay.
Yeah. So your advice that you shared about for first people or people who are just first learning that their child might have PANS sounds like a lot of that would also apply to homeopathy. I'm just curious if you have any other advice that you would offer specific to homeopathy other than like, it's going to take some time and you maybe need to hunker down and have some patience and take care of yourself. Like that all applies there. Is there anything else for people who are considering it or who are maybe on the early side of their healing journey?
Yes. Okay. So two things. One, stop lurking and make the phone call because I know there's people lurking because homeopathy is such a, that's going to sound disrespectful, but it's wild.
Yeah.
You know, like it's wild. It's just like, what? Something you can buy at the grocery store is going to stop my child from raging. Are you serious? Like, and my husband to this day is still like, yeah, whatever. He lets me do whatever, but he will never admit that this has been helpful because he's way too clinical. So stop lurking because it's weird and make the phone call. Like homeopathy, it's unique. It's different. It's not something that people are going to understand or know about. That's okay. Make the phone call. That's the thing I wish I had done sooner. And then I know people say this too all the time, and it's something you hear a lot, but you have to get so good at observing. Mm-hmm. And I see that firsthand when I didn't take great notes for whatever reason, this month was hard or whatever, you know, it becomes difficult for your provider to know what to provide because, you know, we are the eyes and ears, the parents are the eyes and ears. And like, you just have to be so good. And it's almost obnoxious because of how in-depth you have to do it sometimes. And like, I would just have my phone and a notes page. And anytime I saw anything, I would write it down. And maybe it was nothing. And the weirdest things, like that whole example I talked about where she was talking to herself in her room and scripting, right? Like, that's not something you would normally think to share with a doctor. But that one thing turned into 4 more years of tracking it. You know what I mean? And it was, I believe that symptom was pretty informative for Dr. Rowley.
Mm-hmm.
So those things that you don't think have anything to do with it, write it down. Because, you know, we're not just looking at, oh, there was a rage today or they were crying or they had a tick or whatever. It's not just physical stuff. It's like anything they say, do that you find unique or in any way different, write it down and share it. I think that was very helpful.
And I'm just going to add for anybody who, so, you know, some people that causes them a lot of distress and they think they can't do it. It's like, there are ways that you can do it where you're holding on loosely or you're observing in a way that still functions for you. And we'll put a couple of links in the show notes for some episodes on observing and some our YouTube page that has like a whole series about being a really good observer for anybody who's feeling stuck with that. We'll put links to all of that for anybody who wants to see that. But that's really good advice for people who are early on.
Yeah. And I feel like I've seen comments like that too about people having anxiety about taking all these notes and whatever. So for me, it was my jam. Because I like to research and I like to dive in, I was just like, what can I write? And that was actually made me feel better because I felt like I was contributing and, you know, being able to really see what was going on. And it helped me learn what was important to Dr. Rowley, because some of the things I'd said, she'd be like, yeah, yeah. And I'd be like, okay, note to self, don't talk about that again, because she didn't care about it. It wasn't a big deal. But then, you know, it was important for me to learn that too. But for me, it really helped me, I think, to observe that way, because it sort of gave me peace that I was doing what I could do. But on the flip side, I can see why it would cause someone like, whoa, this is a lot, you know, because it is. It's very time consuming.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting, especially if you have more than one child, to donate that much time to one, you know, to one kiddo. So thankfully she was my youngest. And so naturally I spent more time at that point with her anyway. But yeah, so
Sarah, I'm so grateful for you and your willingness to come and be vulnerable and share about your experience and some really hard things. And I'm so grateful. Like I said, we will have a trigger warning on this because I don't want people to have to listen to something that might be hard for them. And there are some people who really need to hear the hard things to see that they're not alone and to see that you can have these really hard and really scary things and come out on the other end. And like the light that came to your face when you started talking about how your daughter's doing right now just speaks volumes. If you said no words, but we just had you on mute and we were looking at the expressions on your face and just the change in just everything. It's profound. It speaks volumes. Just the difference that you see. And so like I said, I'm so grateful that you were willing to actually talk about the really hard things and not just over it. Because
you have to.
We do. We do.
Yeah, I have to. I have to talk about it because it happened.
Yeah.
I know that we're not alone in that and that other people are going through it. So.
Yeah. And it's not her fault. It's not your fault. And so we can't hide these things that have happened to us, not things that we've caused for ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not something for people to feel ashamed of, and so many people do. I'm very grateful that you were willing to share.
Absolutely. And I can't even express my gratitude to you guys for everything that you put out there, for just one, having this practice that is, you know, so unique. It's not something you can find just anywhere, right? And just I don't even have words like to express, I don't know. I was one of those people that sent a Christmas card. I emailed it actually to you and Dr. Rowley. And I think I basically said like smiles, you know, smiles by Dr. Rowley. Like that literally, like we're here because of her and she's here because of you. And I am so grateful for everything that this practice and she has done for my family. I can't even like, I've never even met the woman in person. And it seriously, like, I don't have words. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, on that note, with no words for all of the things that we are all grateful for, we will call it a day. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Jody.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, everybody.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We would love to connect with you on social media and have you as part of our amazing community. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas.
If Facebook isn't your thing, you can also connect with us on Instagram and YouTube by searching for Resilience Naturopathic or clicking the links in our show notes. You can also visit our website, resiliencenaturopathic.com.
As always, we value your partnership in advocacy and education. Your support through following, sharing, rating, and reviewing our podcast is crucial in our mission to teach the world about PANS, PANDAS, and homeopathy. So if you found this podcast helpful, please leave us a review. Together, we are making a difference.
And finally, this podcast really is for you. Your questions and feedback help us make sure we are answering the right questions so you can feel confident making the next right step for your kids. Send us your questions or request guests by emailing us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com, also linked in the show notes.